Welcome to the Deep Dive, the show that extracts the most important nuggets of knowledge from a stack of sources, giving you a shortcut to being well-informed. Have you ever looked at our modern world with its nations, its bustling markets, and its governments, and wondered why it feels so incredibly fixed, almost immutable, yet simultaneously, so often in crisis? What if the way we've been taught to understand history has been missing a crucial piece of the puzzle, a foundational insight? Today, we're diving into a truly monumental work that offers a radical new perspective. Kojin Karatani's The Structure of World History. We've gathered a fascinating collection of articles, research, and our own notes to explore this complex theory, which promises to challenge everything you thought you knew about how human societies are fundamentally built.
That's right. Our mission for you today isn't just about revisiting historical timelines. It's about equipping you with an entirely new lens. This framework will help you understand the fundamental structures that have shaped human life, from ancient tribal communities right up to our global capitalist system, and even allow us to glimpse the potential for a radically different future. Karatani, in his unique style, reinterprets the entire sweep of human history, moving beyond traditional economic or political explanations to a more fundamental framework of what he calls modes of exchange. It's a truly profound shift in perspective.
So before we plunge into these modes, who exactly is Kojin Karatani? He sounds like someone who isn't afraid to tackle the biggest questions. What makes him uniquely qualified to offer such a, well, sweeping reinterpretation of human civilization?
He certainly is a formidable thinker. Kojin Karatani, born in 1941, is widely considered one of Japan's most prominent contemporary philosophers, literary critics, and intellectuals. What makes him so distinctive is his incredibly broad intellectual reach, spanning philosophy, economics, political theory, and even literary studies. He didn't start as a conventional historian or economist. His background in literary criticism, surprisingly, gives him this keen eye for underlying narrative structures and patterns, which he then applies to these grand philosophical and political questions.
That interdisciplinary background seems absolutely key to his whole approach. How does that freedom from traditional academic silos allow him to see patterns and connections that others might miss?
That's a great question, and it really highlights his method. Karatani approaches history as a structuralist philosopher, engaging deeply with foundational thinkers like Kant, Marx, and even the logician Gödel. He calls this his transcritique method, a way of cutting through conventional historical narratives and ideologies to reveal the deep, recurring structural patterns beneath the surface. It allows him to build upon Marxist insights, for example, but also offer a fundamental critique of economic determinism, grounding his vision for the future in Kantian ethics. It results in a genuinely global, non-Eurocentric view of history, which is incredibly refreshing and vital for understanding our interconnected world.
Okay, let's unpack this core idea then, because it truly is the bedrock of his entire analysis. Karatani argues that all human societies are fundamentally structured by the interplay of four distinct modes of exchange. It's not just about how we produce things, but how we relate to each other through this act of exchange. What are these four modes, and how do they differ from what we might typically think of as economic systems?
This is where his framework truly distinguishes itself. He posits that human history isn't just a story of changing technologies or power struggles, but of these fundamental ways people organize their lives through exchange. Let's break them down. First, we have mode A, reciprocity. Think of this as the gift economy, which is very common in tribal or clan societies. It's based on mutual exchange, community, and kinship. Imagine a small village where everyone knows each other, sharing resources, favors, and obligations personally. There's no explicit accounting, just a deep social fabric of mutual giving and receiving. It's all about maintaining social bonds.
Right, like a sort of deep-seated mutual obligation.
Exactly. Next is mode B, plunder and redistribution. This is essentially the logic of the state. It governs through force, through taxation, which Karatani often frames as a form of institutionalized plunder, and then redistributes that wealth, not for the common good in a reciprocal way, but to maintain order, ensure loyalty to the ruling power, and sustain its own apparatus. An ancient empire collecting tribute from conquered lands, or a kingdom raising taxes for its army and court, is a perfect example.
So, power and control, basically.
Precisely. Then there's mode C, commodity exchange. This is the market principle, the one we are most familiar with in our modern world. Here, goods and labor are exchanged for money based on mutual consent between anonymous individuals. It's the logic of capital, driven by profit and endless accumulation, where relationships are often impersonal and contractual. Buying groceries at a supermarket, for instance, is a straightforward example.
Okay, that's capital.
And finally, the most complex and in many ways the most hopeful, Mode D, the X factor. This isn't a historical stage in the same way, but a persistent underlying human drive. It's a return of the repressed Mode A, but on a higher, more universal level, a fundamental human yearning for free and equal association, transcending the personal obligations of community, A, the coercion of the state, B, and the profit motive of the market, C. Historically, you can find its seeds in universal religions and ethical philosophy ideals of a shared humanity.
That's a powerful framework. It immediately makes you think about how these different logics operate simultaneously, even in our own lives, though one might be dominant. With these four modes in mind, how does Caritani then take us on this historical journey? Where do we first see these dynamics emerge? And crucially, how do they start to combine and even clash?
Caritani traces this evolution brilliantly. He starts with early human societies, which he calls mini-world systems. These nomadic or tribal groups were structured primarily by Mode A, reciprocity, based on kinship and gift-giving. What's crucial here is his argument that the state, Mode B, doesn't typically emerge organically from within these communities. Instead, it's often imposed from outside by conquering groups who subjugate settled agricultural societies. They establish a system of rule based on plunder and redistribution, creating a constant tension between the communal reciprocity of the villages and the coercive state power.
Ah, so the state versus the community right from the start.
Pretty much. As societies grew larger and more complex, we see the rise of what he calls world empires, vast political formations like ancient Rome, imperial China, or the Islamic caliphates. These were overwhelmingly dominated by Mode B, the state, functioning as massive redistributive machines, consolidating power and resources through conquest and taxation.
Now, thinking about these vast empires, we've covered states and plunder, but is there a point where we start to see a new dynamic emerge, perhaps a glimmer of that X factor that Mode D you introduced earlier, challenging these established systems?
Absolutely. This is where, even within these vast imperial structures, Caritani identifies the first major historical appearance of Mode D. He points to the rise of universal religions, Buddhism, Christianity, and Islam as profoundly significant. These religions proposed a radically new kind of community, one based not on kinship or state allegiance, but on shared voluntary faith, equality, and universal reciprocity among all believers. They transcended tribal and imperial boundaries, offering a universal ethical framework. However, this raises an important question. How were these radical universal ideas often co-opted and institutionalized by the very states they challenge, sometimes becoming tools for legitimizing power rather than purely liberating forces? This tension between the universal message and state appropriation is a recurring theme throughout history.
That tension between universal ideals and state co-option really makes you think, doesn't it? It's almost like a persistent ghost in the machine. Now, if we project that tension into our modern context, Caritani argues our world is uniquely structured, especially with the dominance of Mode C. What did that mean for everything else, and how did it change the dynamic?
Well, the rise of Mode C, commodity exchange, marked a truly pivotal shift. Caritani meticulously traces the emergence of merchant capitalism, primarily in Europe, highlighting its fundamental difference from earlier forms of trade. This wasn't just about exchanging goods to satisfy needs. It was about the relentless, endless accumulation of capital. This insatiable drive for profit began to reshape all social relations, making commodity exchange the increasingly dominant force across the globe.
So capital starts taking over.
Exactly. But here's where Caritani makes his most profound theoretical contribution. This Mode C dominance didn't happen in isolation. He argues that the modern world is fundamentally bound by what he calls a Borromean knot of capital, nation, and state. So you have capital Mode C, which is the market economy's insatiable drive for profit and accumulation.
Right.
Then you have the state, Mode B, the modern sovereign state, with its monopoly on violence, law, and taxation, providing the legal and military framework that capital absolutely needs to function and expand.
Okay, the protector and enforcer.
And finally, you have the nation, Mode A, in a sublated form, meaning it's transformed and elevated, yet still fundamentally rooted in those communal, reciprocal feelings of Mode A. Caritani argues the nation is a modern invention, resurrecting those communal feelings on a vast, abstract scale. It creates an imagined community, a powerful sense of shared identity and solidarity that papers over class divisions and makes people willing to fight and even die for the state.
Wow. So this idea of them forming an unbreakable bond is incredibly provocative. Does Caritani suggest they're inherently in tension? Or do they also mutually reinforce each other in ways that make them even harder to dislodge?
Precisely the latter. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you see these three are not just distinct entities, but they are mutually reinforcing and deeply interdependent. Capital needs the state for protection, contracts, and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
The state needs capital for tax revenue and economic power.
Right.
And both desperately need the nation to provide social cohesion, a sense of collective identity, and consent from the populace. Caritani argues that trying to undo one without addressing the others is fundamentally doomed to fail. It's why single-issue political movements, historically, often haven't achieved their full transformative potential. You can't just unpick one thread from this knot.
So if this trinity, this Borromean knot, is so strong, how does Caritani suggest we move forward? He's not just explaining history. He's truly offering a vision for a post-capitalist future, a conscious path to Mo D.
He is indeed. He offers a profound critique of past revolutionary movements, particularly 20th century communism. He argues they largely failed because they targeted capital, Mode C, but ended up using and crucially strengthening the state, Mode B. The Soviet Union, for instance, became a hyper-centralized state, essentially a giant Mode B system, not a free association of producers. They replaced one form of domination with another, often more brutal.
So they missed the other parts of the knot.
Exactly. Caritani's vision for the future, then, is the conscious global implementation of Mode D, which he calls associationism. This isn't some utopian fantasy, but a practical, ongoing project of building new forms of social life based on free association and reciprocity. This means creating robust economic alternatives like consumer cooperatives, worker-owned enterprises, or even open-source production models to counter the logic of Mode C.
Okay.
It means developing political alternatives like transnational movements, decentralized governance, and confederations to bypass the sovereign state, Mode B. And it means fostering social and cultural alternatives, such as a cosmopolitan ethics of global citizenship, to challenge narrow nationalism, which is Mode A's modern, often problematic form.
So he's not just critiquing, but truly offering a roadmap. And this idea of consciously choosing that ethical future rather than expecting it to be inevitable, how much does that draw on ethical philosophy, specifically from thinkers like Kant, in his view?
It draws on it directly and powerfully. He connects this vision to Kant's ideas of a kingdom of ends, where every individual is treated as an end in themselves, a principle perfectly aligned with Modi's vision of universal free association. And he also links it to Kant's vision of a global federation for perpetual peace as the political expression of that ideal. Caritani emphasizes that this future isn't a historical inevitability that will simply happen on its own. Instead, it's an ethical and political choice we must actively make, a regulative idea, a guiding star for our actions in the present. It's about consciously building what we want to see.
This framework might seem abstract at first, but it offers surprisingly concrete ways to understand and act in our world today. So what does this all mean for you, the listener? How can we apply these insights in real life?
Well, the first key insight here is how Caritani hands you a powerful new lens for dissecting current events. Think about the surge of nationalism during economic crises. He reveals this isn't just about politics, but a societal reflex Mode A's communal drive reemerging as an imagined community when the market, Mode C, leaves individuals adrift. It's a fundamental safety mechanism, not just a political movement.
That's fascinating.
You can also look at global tensions between globalization and national sovereignty as an inherent tension within the capital nation-state trinity itself. Or consider social movements like climate justice or Black Lives Matter as attempts to assert Mode D ethics and principles of universal equality against the relentless logic of state and capital.
So it helps make sense of these big conflicts.
Absolutely. Another profound takeaway is a rethinking of political strategy. For activists, it challenges them to broaden their focus beyond single issues. Instead of a single front, Caritani suggests a three-front war: economic, countering C with co-ops, political, countering B with transnational movements, and social-cultural, countering national A with a cosmopolitan identity. It's about fighting on all fronts simultaneously.
A much broader approach.
Yes. What's also incredibly liberating is that it encourages practical prefigurative politics. Caritani values local, community-based projects, whether it's a food co-op, an open-source software community, or even alternative local currencies as real-life experiments in Mode D. These aren't just marginal initiatives. They are, in his view, actively building the future right now from the ground up.
So small actions really matter in this view.
They absolutely do. Finally, it offers a deeper understanding of ideology itself. It helps you deconstruct how deeply embedded the ideas of nation and state are in our collective consciousness. We're taught to see loyalty to our nation and obedience to the state as natural, almost biological, but Keratani shows them as historically constructed and contingent parts of this Boromian knot. This fosters a much more critical perspective on politics and identity. Beyond politics, these insights are relevant for understanding organizational management, recognizing how market, redistributive, and reciprocal relationships coexist in a workplace. And critically, for addressing environmental sustainability, Keratani's critique of endless capital accumulation directly informs the urgent need for Modi principles to prioritize ecological balance over profit.
Okay, so it really touches on many different areas of life.
The most valuable lesson you take away is that our modern world, the free market, the sovereign state, and the nation are not natural, eternal, or inevitable. They are a historically specific and deeply interconnected system, a construct.
And you walk away with a powerful realization that the path to a more just and equitable future isn't about reforming just one piece of this system, but requires a holistic project of building alternatives to all three pillars of this modern trinity simultaneously.
Indeed. The lasting insight is Modi as a regulative idea, a guiding star for our political and ethical actions. It's a vision of a world based on voluntary association and mutual respect, a goal we can constantly strive towards, a blueprint for freedom.
What stands out to you about this idea of consciously choosing and actively building an ethical future, rather than simply waiting for it to be an inevitable outcome of history? And how might you begin to build those Modi principles in your own sphere, however small?